welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It is Thursday, September 14th, 2017. We're going to preview week two of the NFL season, and I'm joined by my pal, Matt Ufford from SB Nation. Mr. Ufford, how are you?
I'm very well, Bill. How are you?
I'm great. You know, no one ever asks me. I appreciate
that. Nobody ever asks you. You're expected to be fine because you're the host, but you know what? you should have a chance to be open and emotional as well.
It's tough. It's tough out there for me hosting podcasts all the time. I appreciate
Throwing down the haters on Twitter.
If the block button counts, then yes, of course I am taking care of haters on Twitter. Although Stephanie Stradley, our guest on the Nickel Package yesterday, took some people out of Twitter jail as a result of appearing on the show. So that may be a privilege for guests in the near future if you're so inclined.
Wow, that's impressive.
So I asked you yesterday, and we talked about doing this, which games you wanted to cover. Or a couple days ago, I asked you which games you wanted to cover. And one of the games you threw out there is the game I want to start with today. The Jacksonville Jaguars versus the Tennessee Titans. I don't think the Jags have ever led a Bill Barnwell show before, so I'm excited. Are you, as you said, on the Jagwagon?
I've been burned by the Jagwagon before. I've trumpeted the Jagwagon for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And by the Jagwagon, I was like 7-9 last year. I think I was rooting for 6-10 or 7-9. I was like, I think they can make it to 500 maybe. Sure. And that was not the case at all. So they're still quarterback Blake Bortles. And while I love that defense, any team that gets 10 sacks in a game, no matter the state of the offensive line that they're going up against, 10 sacks is really incredible. Although I think probably Tom Savage deserves some credit for that.
Sure.
But the theme that we're going to touch upon again and again as you and I have this conversation is that the only thing that you can do after week one is react to the tiniest possible sample size. Mm-hmm. And I did, I made a video of this a couple of years ago about after week one, all we do is overreact to the results of week one. And half the time, there's no way to parse which teams were just, you know, not on the right foot or taking their time getting into the real shape, or which things were just complete flukes. Last year, the 49ers looked dominant, blanking the Rams 28-0. And yeah, how did the 49ers do the rest of the season? Not great, Bill.
Not great. So, didn't the Falcons lose too?
The Falcons lost at home to the Bucks, 31-24. Cowboys lost at home to the New York Giants, 20-19. And as later in the season as well, as you know, like the Giants beat the Cowboys twice last year.
Sure.
So, and even Green Bay, and we'll bring the Jaguars back into it, Green Bay struggled to beat the Jaguars 27-23 last year in week one. And Green Bay did just fine last year. So I think that before we get too excited about the Jaguars, I think we're right to be optimistic about the defense. Mm-hmm. We're also right to remain very suspicious of what Blake Bortles can do leading an offense. Not every team is going to take the entire first half off of playing offense. I regrettably am not on the Jagwagon. I'm hopeful for them. I'm mm-hmm. hopeful for the Jaguars. But
you're willing to walk besides the Jagwagon, but not necessarily hop on.
I'm waving to the Jagwagon. I'm, you know, pumping my fist and hoping that the wheels don't fall off, but I'm not willing to ride on it myself.
Mm-hmm. When you saw that quote from Blake Bortles, maybe you didn't see it, the quote about what he did when he lost electricity during the hurricane?
Oh, he played darts for an hour and a half.
Like, were you part of that rush to Twitter to make, like, the, oh my God, the horror, the murders that must have happened with Blake Bortles? Like, that seems like such an, it's almost too good of a setup for a joke, right?
Yeah, somebody saw, I forget who it was, but it was like, that's what happens when you play double in, double out.
That's fair.
Poor guy. He didn't even realize what he's walking into when he said that. You know, he doesn't realize the target that he's making himself.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think when we're talking about whether the Jags are for real, it's not a team-wide thing, right? Like, I believe Leonard Fournette could be a, you know, a workhorse back and be effective for sure. I think the defense, even if they're not as good as they were last week when they were, you know, looked like the best defense in the history of football, are they still going to be good? Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. If they stay healthy, it's going to be, you know, a team that's going to have a good pass rush every week, a team that's going to have two solid cornerbacks in A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey. They're going to have playmakers in defense. Their linebackers are young and exciting. I mean, there's talent up and down that defense. I have no qualms about saying that.
Agreed.
But Blake Bortles was 11 of 21 for 125 last week. And it wasn't like, I went back and watched that game. It wasn't like, you know, they were dropping his passes. And that was, he had Allen Robinson for a few plays before Allen Robinson went out with the torn ACL, but it's hard to believe he's going to get better than he was last year without his best receiver on the field for the rest of the season.
Oof, yeah. That's going to be rough. That's going to be real rough. And the worst thing is that it's going to be rough to watch.
Yeah.
Because if the, and I say this as a fan of a team, the Seahawks, who have difficulty moving the chains when they try to rely on the run game because they have a terrible line.
Oh, we'll get to that.
And then put all the pressure on their defense to do all the work for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to watch. It's not fun football watching.
No, and you kind of get the feeling where if they get ahead early in games and the defense is playing well and they can run the football, then yeah, sure, they're going to win a bunch of games because they'll be able to stay ahead, they'll be able to run clock, and then you would hope that you don't put Bortles in situations where he has to throw. But if they get down 14-0 in the first half of this game, I mean, you're going to be Blake Bortles throwing to Marquise Lee and Allen Hurns, and that's not going to work out very effectively.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and speaking of teams that really want to build upon that model where they're going to run the football very well, that's what Tennessee did last year. And it kind of felt like they, you know, they lost their way. They weren't themselves last week. They, you know, losing to the Raiders, whatever, that happens. No one's going to blame you for losing to the Raiders. The Raiders were a good football team. But last year, they were a two tight end team. They were a fullback team. They went with three wide 44% of the time. According to Football Outsiders, that was the lowest rate in all of football. Last week, they were losing towards the end, so they were a little more aggressive throwing the ball, but 64% of the time they went three wide. And sure, like they signed Derek Decker, they drafted Corey Davis. You want those guys in the lineup, I understand that, but you still want to run the football. That's still your offensive identity. And so I wonder if they are going to kind of get back to basics and try and just run the football, both to slow down that pass rush and to kind of do what they do best under Mike Mularkey.
Yeah, I don't see why they would, now that they have two quality wide receivers, or arguably three, but 22 personnel still makes a ton of sense for them. Or they need to be a power running team, and because Marcus Mariota can still execute those run pass options, those zone read runs. You know, mm-hmm. He scored a touchdown doing that last week, and I hate to say this because I haven't watched the film of that game, but mm-hmm. I watched Red Zone and
close enough.
And I didn't see the Titans on the Red Zone channel. And that should tell you that without actually seeing things, mm-hmm. that tells me a lot about how the Titans performed on offense on Sunday, mm-hmm. and that is poorly.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that last year, you know, they got into the Red Zone, I think, three times all game, which is pretty low. And then last year, they were a team that was not only the best red zone offense in football, but I think one of the best red zone offenses in recent league history. I mean, they were just an astronomically great red zone offense. You heard about Marcus Mariota, how his numbers were so fantastic in the red zone. This game, they did get in three times, but they scored once, one touchdown, two field goals, which is not what they do in offense. They need to punch in for points when they do get there because, you know, their offense is not necessarily going to get there all that frequently, especially if, you know, the pass rush is getting to Mariota, if they're not moving the ball effectively. I mean, they were, you know, they just were not a really great offense the way they you could figure they would be given the talent they have last week. So I'll be intrigued to see. I mean, this is certainly a Jacksonville team that's not to mess with on defense. So I'm intrigued to see from that side of it if they're going to get to the red zone more, if they're going to be better in the red zone, and then what's going to happen at cornerback for them? Because the Jaguars don't have Allen Robinson, but last week, LaShawn Sims was missing with a groin injury at corner across from Logan Ryan, so they brought in Adoree Jackson, their first-round pick, and the Raiders just went after him over and over again. When Marshawn Lynch didn't get the ball three times on that goal line try, it was because they were going after Adoree Jackson with Amari Cooper. So he, you know,
And yet, mm-hmm. that did not result in a touchdown for the Raiders.
Hmm.
And they, on the, so those three plays, they went slant and then fade, mm-hmm. and then the play kind of broke down before they did go for Cooper. The ball was deflected, yeah. I think, before it got to his hands. But The coverage was pretty good on the slant. Mm-hmm. The ball got tipped just barely at the line of scrimmage, which was enough for Cooper to drop the ball. Yeah. But his coverage on the fade was really impressive.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad pass. It was where it needed to be. And Adoree Jackson, I covered this in my column last week. The guy was almost Olympic long jumper. He leaped over the kicker last on a turn. He's got ups. Going after him on the fade is not the right call. So
yeah,
I think that Adoree Jackson, he's like any rookie cornerback. He's going to have his struggles. He, is not a Jalen Ramsey where that he steps in on week one and is the man in the secondary. But I think that he's good, and I wouldn't be too worried. The combination of Blake Bortles and Allen Hurns does not strike fear in my heart for Adoree Jackson.
Yeah, that's totally fair. But I think what's interesting about this game, given what's happened in the South so far this year, the Colts, I want to see Andrew Luck on the field before I'm worried about the Colts being a competitive team this year. So let's ignore them for now. The Texans, yes. Texans looked awful last week. They're playing tonight. They could be 0-2. Hardly out of the question they start 0-2. If the Jags win this game, they're 2-0. Tennessee's 0-2. The Jags have wins over their top two division rivals. I mean, you can't win the division in 2 weeks, but that's pretty impressive. They're in really good shape if they win this game.
They are, Bill. And what I'm going to do is talk about another AFC South team that started out 2-0, mm-hmm. the Houston Texans in 2013. 2-0, and do you know what their final record was that year?
Oh, no. I believe they finished 2-14.
2-14, they finished the season losing 14 straight games, and this is the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I think that they will win more than two games this year. I feel very safe and comfortable saying that. I think that they will be, yes, they can't start any better than 2-0. They can't. Mm-hmm. Especially with the struggles that we've seen with the other teams in the AFC South. Just as much as I don't want to put too much stock in week one, I also don't want to get too rosy in my optimism for any particular team named the Jaguars or Colts or Texans.
You've been burned before.
I've been burned too many times.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you on this one. I've been pretty anti-Jaguars the past few years in terms of my projections, so this is a nice refreshing thing. Maybe I'm into this. I don't know. So we're going to see, but we'll see what happens this week. I think this will be, a telling sign in terms of at least in the short-term future if the Jags are really what they look like in week one. A team we've seen a lot more, two teams that it's a little easier to have some faith in. Falcons-Packers. Let me just start with this. How much antipathy do you feel towards these two teams as a fan of the Seattle Seahawks?
I was really intrigued by that question because the Falcons have ended Seahawks playoff runs twice in the last 5 years, I believe. Sure. Russell Wilson's rookie year, their wild comeback fell just short. Yep. And obviously last season. And then the Seahawks have now played regular season games in Green Bay three straight seasons, week two, 3 years ago, and then week one this year. And the 1 year that Green Bay starts horrible, well, of course, the Seahawks don't go to Green Bay until Aaron Rodgers decides that they're going to win out and Earl Thomas is out. So, the fact of the matter is that I have a lot of love for the Falcons coach because of the Seattle connection.
Sure,
and
sure.
I love watching Aaron Rodgers play. So, this is not nearly, while there's a lot of, competition, a rivalry at the top of the conference with these teams as a Seahawks fan, I don't find them nearly as hateable as, your Patriots or your Steelers, the teams that have provided the Super Bowl losses for my team.
That's fair. But let me ask you, having watched week one with the Seahawks and Packers, how much do you think of what you saw from the Packers on Sunday on the defensive side of the ball? Was the Green Bay defense looking great versus the Seattle offensive line, insert perhaps offensive verb and adjective combination here?
Yeah. I won't give too much credit to either side here. This is two teams working together to make Russell Wilson look that stressed out. The Packers have legitimately very, very good players in Mike Daniels and Nick Perry. Mm-hmm. especially if you watch two of the first three plays of Sunday's game in Green Bay, Reese Odhiambo in his first NFL start at left tackle just got blown up by, I believe, Nick Perry, and just ended the Seahawks' first drive in a three and out simply by destroying the left tackle in his first game. And that's Nick Perry being good, but that's also Reese Odhiambo being way out of his league. Let's call it 50-50. I think that the Packers do have a good defensive line, but they're not, you know, this isn't the purple people eaters. This isn't the steel curtain, you know, like we're not going to be talking at the end of the season about, whoa, this amazing Packers defense. They're good. They're good. But that Seahawks O-line is real bad and will improve to merely terrible by week eight or so.
God willing, that'll be the case. But on behalf of Seahawks Twitter, I have to ask you, are you prepared to fight Tom Cable in the octagon?
Oh, no, not at all. Even though I served in the Marine Corps and I feel like I can handle myself, Tom Cable's a big man, and I would get punched just like his ex-wife or his two ex-girlfriends or his former coaching assistant. I don't want to get my jaw broken.
Well, you're
allegedly. No, it actually happened. They have proof. There's proof. So.
And he's such a good coach. You can't really justify.
Oh, yeah. You know. No, you can't argue with the results, Bill.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, 6 years and counting of these amazing results.
Let's move on from Tom Cable. It's best for everyone involved. We could just yell at Tom Cable for 45 minutes. So in terms of the Falcons, I mean, I went back and watched that game. I watched the condensed version of the game, and I still can't really piece it together. Like, it was a game where the Bears should have won that game. I mean, not only did they really outplay the Falcons for most of the contest, but they dropped two passes in the end zone, or one in the end zone, one on like the half-yard line that would have won the game in the fourth quarter. And in terms of the Falcons' Super Bowl hangover, I don't know if that's a real thing or not. It's hard to say. But we would be talking about that a ton had they lost to the Bears in week one. And the only reason they lost to the Bears was because the Bears slipped up at the last possible moment. So is it not a Super Bowl hangover anymore? Are they still not playing all that well? Because it seems like they're not really playing all that great given how they played against the Bears last week.
Sure. I think that losing a Super Bowl is a hard thing for any team, especially in the way that they did lose it. We saw it with the Seahawks after Super Bowl 49. It took a psychic toll on the locker room. I don't think that I'm being too hot takey by saying that it did affect the locker room, but they're still well coached. They're still really talented. And again, it's just 1 week, and it's hard to win on the road in the NFL. And the Bears broke out this Tariq Cohen player that they have no NFL tape on, and they don't know necessarily how the Bears are going to use him, and they probably didn't account for how shifty he was. He was a real game-changing player for the Bears. And, you know, you say that the Bears should have won, but the thing is they didn't catch those passes in the end zone because their players aren't as good. And because they have Mike Glennon at quarterback, and to take a win on the road, even against a team as lowly as the Bears have, as I'm sure your former colleague Robert Mays will tell you, that the Bears have a reason to be excited about that defense. So I don't know. I'm not that impressed with the Bears, but it's just tough to win on the road, especially week one when you get stuff thrown at you that you might not be expecting. If you do, you are coming off a shorter off season than the Bears are. So, yeah, you got the win. You got the W. Now you're on to Green Bay. You know, they have nothing but, you know, learning points and a check mark in the win column. I think that the Falcons feel probably just fine about their week one play, even with the way it could have gone.
Yeah, you know, even if you think, okay, they didn't play super well, I think that's fair, because just getting the first win off your chest seems like it's a positive thing. And now you're back at home. This is the opening of your new stadium for football. It should be a pretty cool experience. And the thing I'm concerned about, more so than, you know, how they played in week one, is just I think the Packers are really good. I mean, I agree with you that the Seahawks offensive line played a huge part in the Packers looking good, but I mean, they drastically improved the secondary. The offense looks great. I mean, the Seahawks defense, especially, you know, the entire defense, I don't want to pick out a certain part, but I thought they played incredibly well against the Packers offense where guys were getting open. I mean, it wasn't like you know, they had a really, really good pass rush, and then the Seahawks defense, like, defensive backs were making plays at the last second. Like, Earl Thomas was making incredible plays most of the game, and Shaq Griffin made a few nice plays, tip passes away. Like, it felt like it was inevitable the Packers were going to score in pretty much every single drive. So I'd be concerned about that more than anything else in terms of, you know, if I was a Falcons fan, more so than any psychological damage from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I would be worried about the Packers offense. Aaron Rodgers is just hands down, he's the best player in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I don't want to derail this by getting into that conversation, but I question anybody who can watch any Green Bay Packers game mm-hmm. and say, okay, so maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't always, like, I think there are maybe series where you're like, oh, hell, he didn't really have it that series. But yeah. the sheer amount of talent and the plays that he makes, you know, you should be, if your team is playing the Packers and the Packers have 3rd and 16, you should be worried because he's Aaron Rodgers and he has, like, you should, I think that it's totally fair to expect him to convert 3rd and 16. That's how good he is.
Yeah.
He's, and I will say this though. One stat that I found really interesting from Sunday in Green Bay is that, and I'll ask you, Bill, I feel like you're going to know this. Do you know how many plays the Packers had in the red zone on Sunday?
That's a good question. I have no idea.
They had one play in the red zone, and
really?
It was after Russell Wilson fumbled on his own 6-yard line.
Yes.
The Packers punched it in with Ty Montgomery from 6 yards out on the next play, and that was the only time they were in the red zone. The other touchdown, of course, came on the broken play where they caught the Seahawks in the middle of a substitution. And, hey, two touchdowns against a Seahawks defense. I'm not trying to say, you know, watch out, there's problems. And, you know, credit to the Seahawks for having great punt coverage. The Packers had to deal with very long fields. And for the most part, their drives and the way they moved the ball was very good. They just had too far to go against a very tough Seahawks defense. Yeah. I expect them to put more points on the board this Sunday. But I'm really interested to see what this game looks like without the Packers being asleep in the first half like they were in the playoffs last year.
That's the thing. That's what I wanted to ask you about is that, you know, we saw what this matchup was like a few months ago. And granted, you know, there's been some roster turnover, but it's pretty much the same Falcons team with the Packers maybe having a better secondary now, but maybe the offensive line isn't as good, especially with Brian Bulaga maybe missing this game with he's missed practice twice this week with flu-like symptoms and missed the game last week. You know, Kyle Murphy didn't play very well last week. He played okay, but he wasn't that great last week, and he's going to face Vic Beasley, who led the league in sacks last year on Sunday. But overall, you'd figure it's still the same core of guys on both sides. This time last year, the Falcons score the first 31 points of the game. Matt Ryan throws for 392 yards and 4 touchdowns. Julio Jones has 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, it wasn't close. It was a shellacking pretty much from the first moment onward. So why is this game different?
I think that it's going to hinge on the Packers. Like there were such fluky things, like they Green Bay was moving the ball well, and then their first two drives ended with a missed field goal and a fumble in Atlanta territory, and they went deep into Atlanta territory twice with their first two drives and came away with 0 points, and they basically looked up and, you know, they a couple minutes went by in the game, they looked up and they were already out of the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's they have to execute early, right? And the fact that it's these two teams are too similar to have one just be up by 4 touchdowns plus at halftime. I just don't think it's going to happen again. I don't have good football reasons for that, but it just seemed like a little fluky that the Packers would be so far down at halftime.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair, and I think that realistically, you know, the fumbles aren't going to go the Falcons' way again. And the Falcons were, you know, I'm not the momentum guy, it's fair to say, but I mean, they were playing at a super high level this time last year. And just in terms of everyone being in rhythm, Kyle Shanahan not being around, the offense maybe being a little worse than it was this time last year, it's hard for me to sit there and say that things are going to be the exact same. So I think it's going to be a pretty close game, actually. I'm sort of fascinated to see what happens. I'm inclined to pick the Packers, but I feel like just saying that out loud, I already sort of regret it.
Yeah. I think that it's fair to say that the Packers managed to look a lot better than their 17 points would indicate from last Sunday, whereas the Falcons put up more points. They win the game, what, 27-23 or something like that?
I think it was less than that, actually.
They won by six.
They won by six, 23-17.
23-17. But, you know, they put up a much less impressive 23 points. Yeah. So, I don't know. I really don't know. I make 5 picks per week against the spread, and I'm not touching this one. So, I'm just going to root for touchdowns.
Yeah, that's totally fair. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show in a second. But first, guys, if you drafted David Johnson the first couple picks of your fantasy draft, you have my condolences. It's rough. I'm not going to lie. It's going to be hard for you to do anything with Kerwin Williams, with various guys replacing David Johnson. It's just hard to lose your first or second overall pick in your draft and compete over the rest of the season. But the good news is you can play 1 week fantasy football, and you can do it at DraftKings, which is a sponsor of this show. And this Sunday, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 pick'em contest that is totally free to enter. This is a totally new way to play 1 week fantasy football. DraftKings has organized players into 8 tiers, and all you have to do, just select one player from each tier. And of course, you can still choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. And DraftKings, of course, has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill levels. But no matter what, no matter how you play on DraftKings, you get to draft a new team every week without any commitment. You're not stuck with David Johnson on your bench looking glum. So, that sounds good to you. Get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Barnwell to play in this free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. Promo code Barnwell, your share of $100,000 in total prizes, totally free to enter, so why wouldn't you try today? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply, and see DraftKings.com for details. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm joined by SB Nation's Matt Ufford, and we're talking about Week 2 of the NFL season. Let's talk about maybe the most surprising result from Week 1. I don't know. I mean, the Colts were pretty terrible and the Rams were pretty great, but Chiefs might have been the biggest upset. It's a 9-point underdog. I think they were the biggest upset team to win in Week 1. And they're playing the Eagles, who were a team that looked really good in beating Washington last week. So let me start you with this. How many tweets do you think Alex Smith has started and then deleted before sending over the past week?
Oh, man. I've actually never seen an Alex Smith tweet on shared in any sort of social media form. Is he even on Twitter?
That's a good question. I did not check. He's not on Twitter, which makes me think that maybe he was going to start a Twitter just to talk smack, and then maybe he would delete it after Week 1.
That would be an amazing use of Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, what's up? Bleep. Yes. And then just tag everybody with a bunch of hate and then delete his account. That mm-hmm. would actually be the best possible use of Twitter. I should consider it.
He just goes on Twitter, posts like 3 GIFs of him chucking it downfield for long completions, and then deletes his account.
Yeah. I think it was a pleasure for a lot of reasons to see Alex Smith play like that, because as someone who, I want fun football. I don't really care about results so much, and Alex Smith is a results guy. He's a guy who plays it safe and takes care of the ball, and if he converts a 3rd and 10, it's because he hit a guy on a crossing pad or 7 yards deep, you know.
Yeah.
And the wide receiver did the work. Mm-hmm. And to see him hucking the ball downfield, it's like, did he get spooked by Pat Mahomes in the preseason? Or has Mahomes been like, hey man, you can do this too, you know? I don't know. I want to believe that Alex Smith has seen the end of his days in Kansas City unless he starts chucking the ball. And I hope that's the case, because it was so much more fun to watch a quarterback go for the killing blow. The Chiefs were I think that the game was, the Pats were up 27-21 when, is that when Smith connected with Kareem Hunt for the 75-yarder? Or were they already up at that point? I think I think that was what put them up for good. And it's
it did. That was in 2027.
Instead of trying to build a long drive, and he just went for the killing shot because that's what he saw in a mismatch with his running back downfield beating a linebacker. And I was like, Alex Smith, you've had it all along, my man. And I'm really excited for him. I hope that this is the Chiefs' offense. They have dynamic, fun weapons in Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. And if their new offense is like, hey, we're just going to get these guys in space. We're going to use college spread. We're going to use spread concepts. And we're going to attack deep if that's presented to us. God, the Chiefs are going to go from a team that I hate watching to a team that I'm not going to want to miss. And that's delightful.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, this was a game where, not too much recapping of this game, but it kind of felt like even after that play, you know, they went for the killing ball. It's like, oh, that's really cool. I mean, that's impressive. That's the second long touchdown of the day because he had Tyreek Hill for a bomb earlier in the game where Hill was wide open. And it was like, oh, well, it's just Alex Smith's a wide open guy. Anyone could do that. Maybe that's true. But that second pass really reinforced things. And then you kind of figured, okay, well, they're up one. You know, the Patriots are going to score. And then the Chiefs will kick a field goal and come really short. Or, they'll end up in a situation where they'll kick a field goal to go up four. And the Patriots will score a touchdown to win. You kind of figured it was going to end with the Patriots still winning. But that's not what happened, of course. They scored, they stopped the Patriots twice, including on a fourth and one, and then drove downfield and got the Kareem Hunt touchdown to kind of wrap things up. And then the Tre'Quan West touchdown to make it a blowout. And I don't, I hate to say, well, think about the past, but the thing I'd be concerned about is the last game where the Chiefs were this impressive, you might say, was the win over the Patriots in 2014, where they blew them out on Monday Night Football. It looked like Tom Brady's career was over. The Patriots were in shambles, and of course they went on to win the Super Bowl anyway. But on the flip side of that, Chiefs went out that week and lost to the final to the 49ers in Jim Harbaugh's final year with the team that was, they were okay. They weren't like, they were the bad Jim Harbaugh Niners team. So you'd be worried about a letdown. And I don't know if the Eagles are necessarily let down because I think they're a pretty good team, but I'm just worried that we're not going to see that after this week or after last week.
Yeah. I think that I suspect that the Chiefs and Andy Reid is so good with a bye week, mm-hmm. and what is the off season but the longest bye week possible?
It's true.
So I think that he knew going up against Belichick, and he's a guy that the Chiefs have obviously laid the wood to the Patriots before. Mm-hmm. He is a guy who is a great offensive game planner. And showed the Patriots a lot of looks that probably were not in the Chiefs' tape. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a carefully conceived game plan. And maybe so two things. Maybe he's not going to have the time to do something quite as ornate for this coming game against the Eagles. And the other thing to consider is that the Eagles' defense, led by Jim Schwartz, is so much more disruptive than the Patriots was.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest concern for me is last week the Patriots, their defensive line is pretty much a mess. You had Dante Hightower playing as an edge rusher before he even got hurt. You know, they didn't have the depth to rotate a ton of guys in and out, and the guys they have aren't very good. So Alex Smith had time to make plays. And, I mean, I just don't know if that's going to be the case with the Eagles, who they look great on defense. I mean, Washington had a couple of big plays here or there, but yeah, I really felt like that front four is devastating. Cornerback's going to be a problem with Ronald Darby, but this isn't really a Chiefs team that's great at wide receiver that's going to be able to take advantage of those cornerbacks. So I don't think it's going to be quite as good of a matchup. And then the other part I'm concerned about on the flip side of the ball is that they lost Eric Berry to an Achilles injury, and that it sucks at first off because Eric Berry is a really inspiring story and a great player. But there's just not, you can't replace Eric Berry. It's just not possible. You don't have guys on that roster who can do that. And so now, you're looking at an Eagles team that really had a lot of success throwing to Zach Ertz last week. And if you take out Eric Berry, who was covering Rob Gronkowski on Thursday night, I mean, that could be a situation where Ertz has another really great matchup and has a really nice day, just because there's not really anyone on this team who can take his place as a cover safety or a cover linebacker.
Yeah. Obviously, Eric Berry does different things than Earl Thomas does, but having just watched the Seahawks defense in 2016 lose Earl Thomas, and it was Robert Mays and Kevin Clark who pointed out that the Seahawks defense with Earl Thomas, opposing passers had a passer rating equivalent of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And the Seahawks without Earl Thomas, opposing passers had a passer rating equivalent of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with the, when a defense loses a free safety that is basically the best in the conference.
Yeah.
So, and you could probably say the same thing about Eric Berry. And now they do slightly different things in their defenses, but I am seriously concerned about the Chiefs' defense as a result. Just seeing the way the Seahawks absolutely fell off a cliff on defense last year, you know, Eric Berry, not just, and he's an emotional leader of the team too. He's highly respected. I, as good as Justin Houston is, and certainly was in week one, I have grave concerns that the Chiefs' defense is going to struggle. And that the Alex Smith-led offense is going to have games where they put up 40-plus points because that might be a necessity if the defense struggles without Berry.
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping that Justin Houston is healthy finally after years of kind of being injured and not being 100%. Maybe he helps out. Maybe they have a better pass rush than they've had in years past, and that takes off some of the, you know, some of the loss of losing Berry. But we even saw last year, I mean, the Seahawks' pass rush was fine, and even with a good pass rush, there were just too many big plays. It just wasn't that ability to hold up in the secondary the way they had in years past without Earl Thomas. And again, like you said, different sort of player, but same sort of concern in terms of his impact and ability to, you know, control games from, you know, from center field and as a cover safety. So yeah, the Chiefs are currently the Football Power Index's Super Bowl favorites. And I just, given the Eric Berry injury, just given their history, it's tough for me to believe that's actually true.
No, the Seahawks stumbled into the playoffs without Earl Thomas, and that was with, I think, 7 weeks without him.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs are looking at 15 games without him. That's even if you take into account, like, okay, maybe we can find various stop caps, or we can scheme around it. Mm-hmm. We've got more time to find a solution. I have my concerns, and I don't. First of all, even I think the Football Power Index is once again making too much out of 1 week's worth of data.
Yeah.
It's don't be fooled, FBI. You should know better.
You're a computer.
Yeah.
You can see the past.
So no, the Chiefs should not be Super Bowl favorites. They shouldn't have been before week one, and certainly not after week one, despite the great result.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, let me ask you, as someone who you see Twitter a fair amount, do you think any team's fans want a player to be great right this second, right now, than Eagles fans want to believe Carson Wentz is a elite quarterback right now?
I cannot think of a player who has the pressure on his shoulders. Maybe Marcus Mariota, but I feel like that's not something that is expected. Maybe Titans fans just aren't as loud as Eagles fans, but I feel like the pressure for Mariota to be great comes as much from the media as anything else. I think that, like, Carson Wentz feels it from the fan base. And so, yeah, I know the answer to your question, short answer, is no.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll take the long answer, too. This is a podcast. You can stretch out. And I mean, like, I went and I broke down Wentz for my column on Monday. And he looked, I mean, there are stretches where he looked great. Throwing intermediate passes, he was awesome. I mean, he was hitting guys in stride. He was finding the open receiver. It looked like pitch and catch at times. But, and of course, there was an incredible touchdown to Nelson Aguilar, you know, downfield, which was awesome. Obviously, that's a great play. And I'm not going to say that's not a great play. It's just, you're not going to do that every week. It's just not, unless you're Russell Wilson. Carson Wentz is not Russell Wilson. You're not going to do that every single week. The problem was he left three touchdowns on the field. Two long passes to Torrey Smith, where Torrey Smith had burned Josh Norman to the ground, and then he almost threw an interception on one of them, underthrew him on the first one, overthrew him on the second one, and then had a weird pass to Aguilar that should have been a touchdown that Aguilar had to make basically a leaping catch for, ended up being a completion and a first down, not a touchdown.
Yeah,
and
then, yeah, I remember that play, and I was like, ooh, he should have scored on that one.
Yeah, and then that drive ended with a touchdown pass to LeGarrette Blount, which was insane, because that should not ever happen in the NFL.
No. It's some unusual game planning from Doug Peterson.
Yeah, Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, and this is also that just occurred to me. It's a Doug Peterson-Andy Reid double revenge game.
a double revenge game. Man, that's right, because he's facing the Eagles, and oh man, I'm sure there's just years of bad blood between Peterson and Reed. Oh, hey, thanks for employing me all those years. Screw you.
Do you believe the Andy Reid three stakes story?
Yes, I believe every single story that bubbles up from Kansas City, whether it's like I've been at this barbecue joint, you know, six times over the past 3 years, and every time I've gone there, I've seen Andy Reid. There isn't an Andy Reid food story that I'm not going to believe.
I mean, whatever. You know what? He likes eating. I like eating. I can't fault it for that in the slightest. I can't imagine on what basically amounts to a job interview when the Eagles were interviewing Andy Reid to be their head coach, having the gumption, I will say, or perhaps the stomach, to order three steaks and being like, this is the bar I want to set with this owner. I'm going to order three steaks. That's insane to me, but I'm kind of impressed. Like, I'm really proud of him in a strange way.
It's maybe he was just really hungry, Bill.
It's a long day of interviews, and he's like, I'm really looking forward to those steaks when I get off today.
Did you say steaks plural?
Yes. You know, when you order something and like you say it, and you're talking to the waiter or waitress, and you say it, and like you want to order something else, and you're like, "Yeah, can I get that ribeye?" And they're writing the ribeye, and you're like, "And a T-bone as well." Like, I just imagine what that waiter looked like.
And can I get a filet mignon on the side?
Yes, as an appetizer, I'd like the filet, please. just imagine what see. That.
Let's see what that waiter said. To start, I'll take the filet. For my main, I'll take the New York strip, and for dessert, I'm feeling, more meat.
Do you think it's better if you order the three steaks at once, or you order one steak, and then you're like, actually, and like, waiter comes back, hey, how's everything going? Yeah, I kind of want to order another steak. And then he does that twice over the course of the same meal.
just keep them coming, pal. Just keep them coming.
Maybe
I don't know what's worse. I think you should go in with a plan. I think that's somebody who knows what they want. You give the server time to like go and like shake their head and be like, wait, I have this right. And then they have the rest of the night to kind of like adjust to it. Mm-hmm. You don't want to catch them off. You don't want to catch them off guard.
All right, Matt. Well, we'll get to the final game on our slate in a moment. But first, let's talk about Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And of course, you know Blue Apron. You've heard about it maybe on other podcasts. You've seen your friends eat it. You've probably been jealous. I know I was before I had Blue Apron for the first time. But man, it is worth the wait. Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient you need for the recipes you're cooking. So they're reducing food waste. They've established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Seafoods is sourced sustainably. The beef, chicken, and pork comes from responsibly raised animals. And produce is shipped from farms that practice regenerative farming. Cooking builds strong family bonds. You're eating healthier, you're eating fresher, you're eating better food, and you're eating tasty food. That's the best part. You're eating skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. You're eating garlic butter shrimp and corn with green bean salad and roasted purple tomatoes. You're eating summer vegetable and egg paninis with Calabrian chili mayonnaise and Capri salad. It's good. This stuff just sounds good, let alone actually tastes good, and it does taste good. It's affordable. There's a variety. You can get, if you are a vegetarian, you can get vegetarian-friendly meals. I don't think you can get strictly meat. That would be weird, but you can definitely get vegetarian-only meals. That works out. So it's easy, comes with an easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients. You can prepare it in 40 minutes or less, so there's really no excuse. And even better, if you decided maybe it's a little too expensive, it's not. Not only is it affordable typically, but even better, you can get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/barnwell. Free meals, free shipping. I think that adds up to $0. I'm not sure. I'm not that good at math, but it sounds like it's free. Blueapron.com/Barnwell. Check for yourself. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me on Twitter that I made a mistake and it's not free, and I'll apologize. But I'm pretty sure it's free. Blueapron.com/Barnwell. First three meals, free, free shipping. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, so let's finish up here. Let's talk about Viking Steelers. Let's talk about something you did to me personally, Matt Offred.
Oh, God.
I listened to your podcast, and you and your co-host were suggesting that Sam Bradford was going to be great. This was 2 years ago when he was about to start with the Eagles. And you were like, yeah, you know, I've heard of the skeptics, but Sam Bradford's going to be great. And I was listening to it. And I was in Brooklyn. And I'm like, I think they're right. I think maybe I'm wrong about Sam Bradford. And he wasn't that good that year. He kind of stunk. And I was like,
I have no recollection of this.
I don't have the audio tape, but you guys tricked me into liking Sam Bradford.
If you don't have the audio, then I deny it.
You deny it? That's fine. That's fair. Hold on.
Just answer my question first. Was that Chip Kelly's last year in Philly?
It was.
Okay, so I was drinking the Chip Kelly Kool-Aid, and that's why I believe that. It was not so much a belief in Sam Bradford as it was, like, Chip Kelly made Nick Foles good. Surely he can make Sam Bradford good. Mm-hmm. And I was incorrect about that.
Well,
so if it happened, if it indeed happened, as you say that it did.
I would not lie. But I will tell you, maybe you're just your time frame is off, because Sam Bradford looked awesome on Monday night. Granted, he was playing the Saints, and the Saints are terrible, but
Saints.
A very big but here. He looked incredible. Like, he was so good. He looked like the best quarterback in football for stretches on Monday night. So even if he's not playing the Saints on a week-to-week basis, do you believe that Sam Bradford is in a situation where he can play the best football of his career this year in Minnesota?
I think that... I'll say yes, but the way that you have framed that, Stephon Diggs, I think the combination of Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are very, very good wide receivers. Dalvin Cook, I think, is going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. My concern is that Sam Bradford, because of his injury history, and I've watched him a lot with the Rams in those NFC West games, he is more so than any other quarterback that I've seen, so very different when he gets hit.
Yeah.
And it's not just, every quarterback is worse under pressure. We know that. But when he comes under pressure, he's very much a different quarterback. His throws lose their accuracy. And he was pinpoint accuracy against the Saints. But we cannot over – the Saints have been eventually – assuming the heat death of the world doesn't happen the next, 1 to 5 years, we're going to look back on this period of like 2011 to going on 2017 now. The run that this Saints defense is on is, I would guess that it's unparalleled how bad their defense has been every single year. Like, it is a miracle that this team has been as good as 7-9 for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. That is all Drew Brees, testament to his Hall of Fame credentials, because the defense has been so putrid. And while I think Cameron Jordan's a great player, and I was going to try to find something else nice to say about the Saints defense, and it's just not there, Bill. It's just not there.
It really isn't. So, I had a stat I liked about Drew Brees, was that over the course of his career in New Orleans, he's had, I think, three defenses that didn't rank 24th or worse in DVOA. Something like that, either 22nd, 26th. Like, it's in the mid-20s or worse in DVOA. So three defenses that were better than that. And those teams won an average of, like, 11 games.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Okay. Yeah. So the Saints are another story, but how they affect this matchup here is that we have every right to be skeptical until the Vikings prove themselves. It's going to be a very different story against a much tougher defense playing at home in Pittsburgh. And that is going to be a much truer test of what Sam Bradford can do. So, take what you saw on Sunday, take what you see in week two in Pittsburgh, and split the difference. And I think that's going to be Sam Bradford's 2017.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it's right to be a little patient with Bradford in terms of trying to figure out if he's actually going to be a different sort of player, given that we have a lot of data saying he's about a below average quarterback. But, certainly deserves some of the time to see what he has there. You mentioned the Pittsburgh defense is a lot better. I agree. Let me ask you, though, given what we saw last week, why aren't NFL teams just taking any members of the Watt family early in the first round? It just seems like, why are you going to get fooled again? Like, if you pick a third Watt brother and he's terrible, like, you know what? You've made dumber decisions. Like, you're going to be fine. It just seems like, don't let these guys fall in the first round. It's stupid.
Well, but then you end up with Derek, and,
maybe Derek's good. I don't know. I'm not willing to rule that out yet.
I feel like I've listened to enough of your podcast, Bill, that you don't feel quite that strongly about fullbacks. So, But no, T.J. Watt, obviously two sacks and interception, just an impact player all over the field against the Browns in week one. The Steelers defense is just fast. They're just really athletic. I feel stupid saying that about NFL players. They're all really athletic, but the fact that the Steelers, you know, stand out even above the NFL average, it's a fast, strong defense. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested to see what TJ Watt is going to do on a week-to-week basis against teams that, say, aren't the Browns. So,
what I find concerning is that TJ Watt played ahead of James Harrison, who only had 4 snaps in week one. I mean, do you think that the Steelers are trying to save James Harrison for the playoffs, or is there going to be a thing where, like, he's furiously weightlifting on the sidelines a few weeks from now, trying to get Mike Tomlin's attention and put him in the game?
I mean, I've been over James Harrison's career since 2011. So the fact that I'm just over it. Like, yeah, that's great. You're in the weight room at 5 a.m. You're, you know, lifting the entire rack. That's great. the performative aspect of you know, putting the workouts on social media, it's like, mm-hmm. I get it. I'm James Harrison's age, and I'm just like, I get it, man. You love football. You love being the strongest guy. Like, I'm just,
you're past it.
It's time. I'm fine with James Harrison being on the sideline. He can take over, you know, Joey Porter's role as a guy yelling at people from the sideline and getting into fights with the opposing team.
That's actually a really good role for him, now that I think about it. I really like that idea. The weak link, you'd say, in the Vikings defense, which looked, I think, pretty solid against the Saints, who, of course, do have a good offense on Monday night, would be Trey Waynes, who's the sort of second corner who has been a problem for the past couple years now. And against certain teams, you can kind of hide Trey Waynes, but you can't do that with Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant in the same lineup. So if you're the Vikings, do you take Xavier Rhodes, your number one corner, who was a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, and stick him on Antonio Brown, who, by the way, went to the same high school as Xavier Rhodes and is friends with Antonio Brown and vice versa? Do you want to put Rhodes on Brown across the entire field and risk that and then hope that you can get Waynes against Martavis Bryant? Or do you just play sides and hope that you can get enough safety help with Harrison Smith over the top on Antonio Brown?
Bill, I gave a lot of thought to this. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about it a little bit beforehand, and I wish that I could give a valuable answer that would somehow show insight into Mike Zimmer's, you know, thought processes. Mm-hmm. But, like, Mike Zimmer knows a lot better than I do what to do with his defense. And even though the Vikings secondary seems to think that they know better than Mike Zimmer, I'm willing to bet that Mike Zimmer actually knows a lot better than they do. I don't know. Obviously, Xavier Rhodes, was it Jordy Nelson last year that he was supposed to shadow, and the defensive backs, and the Vikings lost that game, yes?
Yeah, they did, quite comfortably.
Yeah. So I think if that's what Mike Zimmer wants to do, then he should absolutely do it. You know, I can say what makes sense to me as a, you know, a pretty dim-witted fan. They should run the ball more. Run the ball, Paul. But I don't know. I'm not. There's a lot of times where I feel like I've watched the game. Oh, I have insight into this, mm-hmm. and oh, well, clearly you should call the timeout before the 2-minute warning. Yada yada. All these things where smart analysis says to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't know the right thing to do here. And I
that's fine. That's a great answer.
As someone whose baseline is rooting against the Steelers, I hope Mike Zimmer comes up with the right thing to do.
That's a totally valid answer. Let me finish up with this. I don't know the answer to this question, and I'm trying to figure out what the answer is. Is Jesse James good?
Man, I wish I knew this one too, because every time what I see on the field, mm-hmm. I'm like, he ain't that good. But then he's also, you know, Ben Roethlisberger made Heath Miller look, you know, pretty. Heath Miller put up great numbers for a tight end for years.
Yeah, for a decade.
And he never looked that great. And, you know, Jason Witten kind of does the same thing for Dallas. That guy is so slow, and yet he catches everything. Mm-hmm. And is Jesse James the next, like, Heath Miller? Maybe. I don't know. Nothing that I've seen suggests that, like, hey, this guy, wow, he does. doesn't seem to have the explosive speed, but then you look at the box score and you're like, whoa, he got another touchdown?
Yeah.
That guy just, the Steelers magic.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
They are well-versed in the dark arts of football.
They're the football Cardinals. It's really irritating. I don't like
they
it.
They are. Ugh.
Do you think they win this game?
I think it's going to be the Steelers because Ben Roethlisberger is so much better at home than he is away. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to point to the Steelers' struggles on the road, but Ben Roethlisberger is just, he's not the same quarterback. You look at his splits home versus away, and I'm sorry that I don't have the stats handy for you.
That's fine.
But he's two completely different quarterbacks at home versus away. And I think that, I think it will be close, mm-hmm. but my concerns about Sam Bradford being more the player he's been his entire career than the player he was in week one mm-hmm. against a very tough and fast defense playing at home leads me to believe that the Steelers have the edge in this game.
Yeah, Roethlisberger, 99.5 passer rating at home and then 88.9 on the road. Much better in terms of his record, performance across the board. Matt, that's it. Where can people check out more of what you do on a weekly basis?
If you follow me on Twitter, at Matt Ufford, U-F-F-O-R-D is the last name, you can find all the links for what I do, including my podcast, which is called Actives. It's a lot of dad talk, but spiced in with football talk as well. And then my new NFL column on Monday mornings is called NFL Dad, and it's about trying to watch football while my two young children get in the way.
That's such a great description of that.
It's
true.
Sorry, one last thing. And I have a video series that goes up twice a month on SB Nation's YouTube channel. Follow SB Nation on YouTube, and you will see that. It is called Regrettably Offsides.
That wasn't your idea?
Yes, it was my idea. That doesn't mean it's not regrettable, Bill.
That's a great way to put this show. Yeah, it doesn't mean it wasn't my idea, but it's still regrettable. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. I had a great time, man. Enjoy the games.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Check out Matt at SB Nation and on Twitter at Matt Ufford. And we have more coming next week. Two episodes of the Bill Barnwell Show and another episode of the Nickel Package on Wednesday. So keep subscribing. Tell your friends about the show. And thanks so much for listening. More coming next week.